Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Wombat Sports Podcast here on blogtalkradio.com, also wombatsports.com and gofightlive.tv. I'm Mark the Q. I'm your host. I had a privilege of interviewing a professor out of the Greenwich. His name is Dr. Alex Channon. Many recent books have been taking a personal historical perspective on women taking up combat sports, but a book just published takes on a look at the expansion through a scientific and scholastic view. Dr. Alex Channon, alongside his colleague Dr. Christopher Matthews, has compiled research and published global perspectives on women in combat sports, women warriors around the world. The book looks into why women are starting to be accepted in these sports and the hurdles they are facing in the sports as it grows globally. Channon is a doctor of sports sociology out of the University of Greenwich and has researched the topic for several years, including publishing papers on women competing in the sport and how it in itself is a psychological and has a psychological and societal impact. In part one today, we'll be discussing the book that came out, the motivations for women to take up fighting, women fighting in the trim with guys, and how we got to the point of acceptance, women participating in fighting. This is a part one. Part two will be coming up on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, and I'll give you that information again as soon as the interview is over. But you guys can go to and you can follow Dr. Channon on Twitter at Dr. Alex Channon. That's DralexChannon. Or Google his name, please, and you guys can check out some really cool papers and and where you can purchase the book. So here we go. This is Dr. Alex Channon, and like I said, we'll be discussing a little bit about the book, The Motivations of Women in Fighting, Women Training in Gym, and the Acceptance of Women in Fighting. So here we go, Dr. Alex Channon.
Dr. Channon, can you tell me a little bit about how the book came about?
Well, the book came about because myself and my colleague Christopher Matthews, we both had our academic careers started out as PhD students when we were both doing research on martial arts and combat sports. He was doing his research on men's boxing, and I was doing my work on sex integration in various different martial arts classes, so men and women training together. So we both had a pretty strong interest in gender issues in the martial arts and the combat sports world more broadly. And during the time that we were studying, so that's sort of 2008, 2012, for our PhDs, a lot of pretty important changes were afoot in terms of the opportunities for women to compete at the highest level in combat sports, particularly in mixed martial arts. We had women entering the UFC for the first time, and then, of course, with the inclusion of boxing in the Olympics as well, the Olympic Games, which was in 2009, that was voted on the Olympic program. So we thought, you know, this is quite interesting change in the world of sports. It's long overdue change, I think, and we looked around, and there's not a great deal of published research on specifically on women in combat sports. But we thought that there was certainly a need for it, and so we set about the project of putting this book together.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I'm taking it from a different kind of perspective. I'm more of a stats guy than I am taking it scientifically, but just been observing, being a fan for 7-8 years now, you know, just seeing the sport evolve from where it was to it is now. You know, I do have mixed feelings at some points, but it's been a very interesting ride, to say the least. How did you go about doing the research in terms of the book? And I know there's a lot of the stuff that a lot of other people had written in terms of it, in terms of their papers, et cetera. But how did you go approaching this book and kind of doing your research? And did you interview or talk to any female fighters along the way?
Well, for the book itself, actually, the bulk of the research in it is not my own research. So I wouldn't want to take credit for that. That's the task that Christopher and myself had here was an editorial task, more than a researching and writing task, although we were involved in helping the authors sort of edit their pieces for the final product. What I can say about the research that underpins the book is that the majority of the chapters here are written based on ethnographic or other forms of sociological research. So there are lots of different women's stories being told here from different parts of the world, women engaged in different combat sports. I think you might glance at the contents list. We've got chapters on boxing, MMA, karate, there's a chapter on professional wrestling as well. So it's quite an eclectic mix which tries to give voice to women in a range of different activities.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a really interesting time. And it's interesting to see that there were a lot of people that have written papers about about female combat sports and where they are in society and where they've come, how far they've come, and, you know, their theories on why this is, or their theories on why women are starting to leap towards taking up a combat sport of some sort. You know, what was the biggest thing you've learned going and editing through this book and reading these other papers and, you know, kind of organizing this into the book?
The biggest thing I've learned, I think, or what surprised me the most from having, well, I started my own research on this, say, in 2008. So since then, I've been academically interested either on my own research projects or working with others and, you know, with collaborative efforts like this one. And the biggest thing that surprised me is just, you know, how long this has been going on, really, that women have been competing in boxing, wrestling, mixed martial arts, all different types of martial arts disciplines for pretty much the same amount of time that men have, at least in the modern era. Women have been doing mixed martial arts since the 1990s, at least, when it started to become very popular for men. Women have been boxing. There's historical evidence that looks at women's prize fighting, so, you know, boxing for money, effectively, since the 1700s, at least, in England. And a lot of the time, I think, people tend to assume that this is all a very new phenomenon, that, you know, just because it hadn't been in the Olympics yet or because it hadn't been in the UFC yet, women haven't been doing this. But actually, it's been going on for a very long time. And as well as that history, that kind of hidden, unforgotten history, we've also seen through the contributions to this particular volume, and also through other research efforts that have been coming out over the last few years, there's just loads of women across the world who are involved in these kind of activities. And as the book shows, in most of these contexts, different countries, combat sports tend to be thought of as a manly thing, and they tend to be populated mostly by men. But that certainly hasn't stopped a significant number of women from getting involved, and from sometimes having to fight pretty hard for the right to be involved. I think that's probably the biggest thing that would surprise anyone, I think, when they approach this area, is the scale of what already exists. And it's something that we don't often think about or talk about.
Yeah, first of all, shout out to my friend Melissa Smith, who co-hosts with me once in a while, especially if we have boxers on. And she wrote a book on the history of women's boxing, and really dedicated a lot of it to the early part of boxing, the earliest female matches back in the 17th century, 18th century, I think, 18th, 19th century. You know, it was amazing to be able to read through her book a little bit about, you know, how long that's gone. But it's been a lot further than that. There's been historical records of women wrestling back in the Spartan days. And back then it was considered a... it wasn't necessarily considered as much as sexy as much as it was the proof that it was a strong woman and she could bear a strong child. It's been an interesting ride in terms of where women's fighting is and what the motivation is for women to take up fighting. You know, have you kind of thought about that in terms of historical events, you know, in your book or just over on your research?
In terms of women's motivation to become involved in combat sports?
Yeah, their motivations, yes.
Okay, I think, well, what the research that we've got in the book and in other scholars' work has shown is there's a great number of motivations for women to take up a martial art or to get involved in competitive combat sports. It's something that we tried to address in the first chapter of this book. We tried to build a kind of typology, so a series of categories of the different ways in which women can get involved in combat sports. And we looked at principally there's four that we addressed in detail, one of which would be the sort of fitness-oriented activities. So you've got your boxer-sized stuff. I'm sure you guys are quite familiar with Tai Bo and other systems like that. Then we talk about self-defense classes, where martial arts or different types of combat sports are adapted specifically for a self-defense kind of lesson. And then there's also, of course, competitive combat sports, where women are interested in being athletes, you know, and competing for prizes or simply for the love of sport. And then, of course, some women get involved because it's something they can do as a kind of performance. Certainly a lot of people who practice traditional martial arts, they give public displays. That can be an end in itself. It's not necessarily competitive, but it's sort of a performative kind of thing, as well as being able to take that on screen, which I think if you were to consider professional wrestling as a combat sport, maybe it stretches the definition of sport perhaps, but something that's very much performed for an audience, for usually for pay. There's a great number of different things that would motivate any individual person before we start considering gender as a factor there. So I think it's quite difficult to pin down, you know, an easy answer to the question, you know, what motivates women to get involved. I think what we've seen in all of the research that we've been dealing with this text and others is that there's just too many to say definitively, you know, this is what motivates women.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated answer for right now. I mean, in the past, it might have been a little bit easier, but yeah, I've talked to many, many different fighters over my 6-7 year span covering the sport, and you know, a lot of them had a lot of different stories of how they got in, and many of them were the ones that you listed. Some of them were doing it for fitness. Some of them were doing it because they were at a point in their individual sport where they got to a point where they got bored and wanted to try another challenge. And there's others that were taking up for self-defense and figured out that they had a knack for it. So it's interesting to hear the stories from a lot of these ladies just personally about how they got involved in the sport, and you know, how some of them have become very successful just by not, you know, even not knowing that they could have done this before. And a lot of these girls didn't have athletic experience either back in high school or anything like that. This may have been the first sport they've ever tried, and they've found wild success in it as well. So it's been an interesting, and from my end, my perspective, it's been very interesting to be able to see that these stories kind of pop up and see their motivations in terms of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, people's motivations change over time, as you mentioned. Yeah, they'll enter something for one reason and you know, discover they have a real talent or perhaps an opportunity to make some money. And that's wonderful. There's that opportunity that's growing now for women in various different combat sports to take it to that competitive level, which is a relatively recent development in many, many disciplines.
Yeah, part of your book actually talks about the idea of women training with guys in the gym. And that's been interesting for me to see as well, because for a long time, men absolutely refused to have women in the gym just because, you know, there would be some kind of jealousy or there would be drama, or they didn't want drama in the gym. A lot of that stuff got broken, especially when Jackson's MMA decided to start a women's team. And those barriers have broken down. So we've seen a lot of females that have, most gyms now have at least one female fighter in their gym that they train at as well. You know, tell us a little bit about that, about the research that you found in terms of women training with guys, and you know, kind of, you know, how that aspect has changed over the past decade.
Well, I'm glad you asked me about that. That's something that I personally researched. That was the basis for my PhD research, was to look at men and women and their training experiences when they're training together. And I mean, I couldn't tell you definitively about historical change. I think it's probably a little bit beyond the scope of the work that I've personally done on that. But my own work that I conducted here in the UK, as I say, between 2008 and 2012, interviewed over 30 martial artists at a range of different clubs. Some of them were mixed martial arts fighters, some of them were boxers, some of them were traditional martial artists. I found a pretty consistent story across all of those different arenas, if you like, in which there was this narrative of a kind of changing of attitudes, particularly, well, in fact, among men and women both. You know, men previously believing that women would not be physically capable of you know, doing the things that the men do in training. Women equally believing that they were, you know, relatively incapable of holding pace with the guys and holding their own against the guys. But what we tend to see is that when men and women do train together for a sustained period of time, especially if they're both, you know, both groups are equally dedicated, they work their hardest, and they come to respect one another's abilities in ways that perhaps surprise them, and then lead to them changing their opinion quite dramatically in some respects about, you know, what women's bodies particularly are capable of doing relative to men's, and specifically when it comes to sparring against each other and hitting each other. It's something that a lot of guys perhaps feel, you know, they feel quite uncomfortable with the notion of hitting a girl because, or, you know, you shouldn't hit women because women are weak, and there's this idea that they won't be able to take their punches, even if speaking in terms of physiology, if the male and the female training partner are relatively the same size, the same stature, they have relatively the same lean muscle mass and so on and so on, the guy still thinks that the woman is less capable than another man of taking a punch from him, so they'll withhold their power. And that can be quite a frustrating experience for the female training partners and also for the men in that situation. And it's finding ways to perhaps move beyond that kind of hesitation and lead to more productive training experiences. And that happened across the sample that I interviewed for my research. After they gave it a chance and after they'd seen or felt in that sort of embodied way, felt the power and the toughness of their female training partners, those men changed their mind about how they ought to behave with the women that they trained with in quite positive ways. And that led to them, you know, training more seriously with their female training partners, which makes the female training partners then feel more accepted within the gym, and generally leads to a greater sense of camaraderie and so on and so on. So quite a lot of positive benefits come from that. But initially, as I say, for most people that I spoke to, it was a strange proposition to be training together in a fighting sport and to be hitting each other particularly.
Yeah, I mean, an interesting story I've heard across the board from a lot of fighters on my end of things is the fact that, you know, I'll ask them once in a while, you know, do you like to train with girls once in a while? A lot of them say, yeah, yes, I do. Because they say that because a lot of the guys take it somewhat easy. I don't think they do it on purpose, but they take it somewhat easy on them because they're afraid that if they put full power or they put too much power into their strikes or too much weight, that it's going to hurt the woman, hurt the fighter. And they like the girls say they like to train with other women just because they know that the girls aren't going to hold back on them if they're going through a training. There's some gyms that I think that they've gotten to that point of acceptance where they can push the limit a little bit further than they feel it's comfortable and it's still fine. But it's an interesting prospect and it's an interesting thing to be able to see. And you obviously have heard this that they're tentative about what's going on as well. Not to mention that the fact that you talk a little bit about physiology. Women tend to be a little bit more flexible, and it's been interesting to see, kind of watch them in a jiu-jitsu situation versus a guy, because women tend to be a lot more flexible, and that's really what you need in jiu-jitsu. I take jiu-jitsu personally, and, just to see some of the flexibility some of the women that I work with have. It's just absolutely unbelievable, and just to watch them in the cage and fight and mixed martial arts, and while I watch them on the ground, they seem to be a lot more exciting than the guys because they're a lot more flexible and a lot more mobile in terms of the ground game. Of things, so it's kind of interesting there physiologically. I don't know if you dove into that at all during your research, but is that something that you also observed?
I'm a social scientist, so in terms of scientific comment on physiology, I wouldn't go too far in terms of what I would say with great confidence there. But certainly, I think people tend to believe that there are physiological differences between men and women, and when they observe it in their training, that tends to sort of be a reinforcement to it. And what, I mean, in terms of the way that physiological or ideas about physiology can sometimes perhaps get in the way of good training is when, it's all well and good, the idea that women have this, this enhanced flexibility. And certainly some women are very flexible indeed. But then when people were using physiology as a way of saying, I shouldn't train too hard with a woman because physiologically they can't take it, it's at that time that people's, the things people think they know about biology kind of get in the way a little bit. So that's really my interest in physiology, is not so much as a physiologist, it's more from looking at how people use their knowledge about biology, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I mean, the perception of what the people think versus what they don't actually know. And a fighter once told me that if you give birth, you can take a punch. As much as we think that women are the weaker sex, actually, they can actually endure a lot more, I think, a lot more pain than a lot of the guys can. So it's an interesting prospect, to say the least, in terms of physiology.
Absolutely. And the arguments about women's physiology have been, used to keep women out of sport for a pretty long time. In terms of general sports history, it wasn't until the 1960s that women were allowed to run the 800 meters race, for instance, at the Olympic Games. Likewise, they weren't allowed to compete in the marathon until the 1980s because of fears about what their bodies were physiologically capable of or not. And that just goes to show you that within sports, particularly within women's sports, it's these ideas about biology that have quite a strong role to play politically in who gets to do what sports. And that's what's really quite interesting.
Yeah, and what, in your opinion, I know this is going to be a complicated answer, but what kind of happened over the past decade or so to make women's fighting more accepted?
Well, that is a complex question, definitely. I think that you've got multiple different factors here. There's sports historians will say different things from, depending on their particular theoretical background. I think an important one for the US is the passage of Title IX, the federal legislation in the 1970s, which, as I guess you guys will probably be a bit more aware than the UK listeners will on this front, that it meant federal money couldn't be spent on educational establishments. Couldn't go to educational establishments unless they would show that it was being used fairly between the sexes. I think I'm maybe getting the language a little bit wrong, but basically it ensured that there would be gender equality in the spending of federal money on college sports. And for a generation of young women growing up after Title IX, women's sports in general were much more acceptable and that's had a huge impact on US culture, and also by extension in other parts of the world as well, because of the role that the US plays in many respects in terms of shaping a lot of our sort of beliefs about sport and so on. Similar legislation in other countries as well. In the UK, we had similar stuff coming through in the 70s and the 80s. So we've got that sort of legislative changes about a generation ago, which have led to a much wider acceptance across our societies of women in sport altogether. With respect to combat sports, I think you think about, again, going beyond the immediate combat sports settings, think about movies and action movies in particular, with strong female leads in a lot of movies in the 90s, like, for instance, the Terminator 2, where we see a strong, muscular female lead in that film. Aliens as well, Sigourney Weaver, quite memorable in that film as a strong female lead. Again, sort of having that combative, aggressive kind of role. So we've got this sort of wider cultural shift, wider political shift, that makes it perhaps a little bit easier for the public to accept women in fighting sports than, let's say, in the 1960s, before all of that, when we were much more used to a much more restricted vision of femininity and of women's place in sport being, far more restricted.
That was part one of our interview with Dr. Alex Shannon. Again, we'll be doing part two coming up on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. In part two, we'll discuss the marketing of female sports, how technology has helped expand the acceptance of female fighting, the expansion of the sport globally, and why MMA has led the way in terms of getting women accepted in combat sports across the board. Like I said, you could follow Dr. Shannon on Twitter at Dr. Alex Shannon. That's DralexChannon. That's DralexChannon. You can also look that up on Google and you can find some more of his research, some of his really great papers out there. He's gotten some papers published about The Ultimate Fighter, also some stuff about about Ronda Rousey, et cetera. They're really interesting in terms of a scientific perspective in terms of the sport. So please look up Dr. Channon's stuff online. Like I said, our part two of our interview will be posted on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I highly recommend you do. We dive into that marketing aspect of everything, and we get in a really pretty interesting discussion about that. So you definitely got to check that out as well. Make sure you guys check out Wombat Sports. We just published some fallout from last night's Invicta FC 14 card. You guys can check that out on the website. I'll have the results from the weekend posted. It's been a kind of a busy weekend, as it were, because with Invicta. Invicta returns in November, and hopefully we'll have some more announcements about that coming up in the coming weeks. And we'll hopefully have some more stuff going on there as well. So let's go to wombatsports.com. You guys can check out the information there. At Wombat Sports, you guys can check out all the news that are streaming over there as well, and Wombat Sports on Facebook. With that in mind, we'll see you guys on Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, with part two of our interview with Dr. Alex Shannon. We'll talk to you then.